The Senate please come to order. Messages from the House. February the 14th, 2007, from the House of Representatives. Message number 373, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 189, prison contraband, ayes 60. Message number 374, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 195, killing or injuring police animals, felony, ayes 60. Concurrence passed. House Bill 201, publication of county commissioner meetings, ayes 59, conflict 1. And concurrence passed. House Bill 202, municipal growth management, ayes 60. February the 14th, 2007, from the House of Representatives, message number 379, conferees appointed, joint conference committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate Joint Resolution 3. The House conferees are Representative Martin, Chairman, Representative Brown, and Dan Zwanitzer. February the 14th, 2007, from the House of Representatives, message number 12, Mr. President. This is to inform you that the House has voted to suspend House Rules 7-1, 11-1, and 12-1 to reconsider the bill listed below. By the vote listed below, the House has passed the suspension of rules. House Bill number 332, bingo. Ayes 43, no 17. February the 14th, 2007, from the House of Representatives, message number 377. Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill number 31, Charter School Amendments. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, no 2. February the 14th, 2007, from the House of Representatives, message number 373, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill number 72, required payments as condition of parole. Pursuant to Joint Rule 2-4, the House recedes from its non-concurrence and adopts the following Senate amendments. Ayes 59, noes 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 14th, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 136, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Geist, Johnson, Perkins, and Vasey, Senator Geist, Chairman. February the 14th, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 69, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 13th, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 159, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Peterson, Townsend, no, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 14th, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 96 in gross, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amendment. Aye, Senators Ullman, Barrasso, Feck, Hastert, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 14th, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 3, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, House Bill 96, Quality Child Care Appropriations, sponsored by the Joint Interim Labor Committee, which was just read in, has an appropriation. I ask pursuant to Senate rules that it be re-referred to committee number 2.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Joint Conference Committee report. Senator Cole, are you ready?
Oh, yes, I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk please read in message number 237?
Joint Conference Committee report, House Bill 31, Charter School Amendments, reference Senate message number 237. Signing for the House, Representative McComey, Chairman, Representative Edmonds and Millens. Signing for the Senate, Senator Cole, Chairman, Senator Jennings and Massey.
Senator Cole.
And Mr. President, I move that the Senate adopt the Joint Conference Committee report and on House Bill 31, Charter School Amendments, and ask the body to vote aye. The disparity we had to do, or I had to deal with the fact that they, as we determined the 12-month period that had to be waited on so that they, before they could refile an application, the only change we made really was the last part of the paragraph you see at the bottom of paragraph E. It says computation of the 12-month period under the subsection shall begin on the date the denied application was filed with the district board. This is very little change from the way it left the House. It's more dependent on meaning. It's more conforming language, and we fixed this a little bit from that last, so I'd ask the body to vote aye.
Question is on message 237 for House Bill 31, Charter School Amendments. And the motion is to accept the Conference Committee report, and the chairman asks you to vote aye. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Barrasso? Burns?
Aye.
Case? Poe? Cooper? DeCaria, Beck, Geis, Hastert, Hines, Jennings, Doe, Johnson, Larson, Massey, Meyer, Moffler, Nicholas, Heck, excuse, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Vasey, Von Slatern, President Schiffer.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, that motion does pass. The Conference Committee report is accepted. Bills on second reading. Members of the Senate, what I think the plan is for this afternoon, we'll take up these bills on second reading and then go back and complete second reading on the budget. House Bill 41, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 41, sponsored by the Select Developmental Programs Committee, Development Disabilities, Emergency Services.
House Bill 41, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 67, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 67, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, Interstate Fire Compact.
House Bill 67, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 115, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 115, sponsored by the Education Committee, School Finance Amendments.
House Bill 115, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 127, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 127, sponsored by the Travel Committee, Film Production Incentives.
We do have an amendment, second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 127, the Von Flacker Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill 127, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 8.
Senator Von Flacker.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 127 and request that dispense with further reading. Yesterday, in our discussions about what qualified in the film production incentive towards the minimum amount of money they needed to spend in the state of Wyoming to qualify for the discount, on page 3, line 7, section A, the amendment that was offered yesterday removed the second half of that, which said, except that the salaries of the two highest paid actors may not be reimbursed. But what it didn't say in previous to that does not state that the salaries that they're talking about will be paid to residents of Wyoming. So I didn't have a problem with removing the salaries for the two top actors. But what I wanted to do is make sure that some of the salaries, or the majority of the salaries, are paid to Wyoming residents, because technically they could come in, claim the wages of some high-paid actors, spend really nothing in the state, do some funding, qualify for the reimbursement, and be gone. So all I added to this was, on page 3, line 8, after rendered in, you would insert into residents of. So salaries and employment benefits for services rendered in to, rendered in and to residents of this state would be how it reads. So the salaries do need to be paid to residents of Wyoming to qualify for expenses under this reimbursement. And I ask for your favorable vote on Standing Committee, or Second Reading, Number 1, Amendment 127.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, I view this as a friendly amendment. It does bring in Wyoming residents as a qualified expenditure, and I think it's a good amendment.
Further discussion. Question is, on second reading amendment number 1, House Bill 127, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We're back on the bill. House Bill 127, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 133, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 133, sponsored by the Select Mental Health Committee, Department of Health Client Information Sharing.
House Bill 133, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 151, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 151, sponsored by Representative Dingery, Resort District Sales and Use Tax.
Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall House Bill 151 be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Okay, we have another second reading bill. Got a few amendments. We are on second reading amendment 30. Second reading, Amendment 30 to Senate File 1, the Nicholas Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, second reading, Amendment Number 30, Budget Affected, Number 27, School Facilities Commission.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I move second reading Amendment Number 30 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, this takes $6.9 million out of the School Foundation Program and puts the money, makes it available for the School Facilities Commission to use it to address off-facility improvements. You recall this was the subject of a bill that was going through. We had some discussion on it. What this says is that the approach that I'm taking is that, look, Facilities Commission, you should treat these decisions in the same way as if you were a property owner. So if you're in business and you're going to go out and acquire a property, you need to take a look at all the costs associated with the located property. And if it turns out that there are utilities that are extended out that need to be extended, then that's part of the decision making that you need to make as to whether to secure that property, whether it's an appropriate property. I submit to you that unless you keep all that decision making into one entity, you're going to make bad decisions. To put that decision making into the business ready community or to the business council, we simply say we don't have to consider that cost when we make decisions. Now, in order to make this thing work, as you do with property owners, if you're a property owner and you're bringing utilities out to your property, first, you want to make sure what it's going to cost you for your utilization. And if you're required to put excess utilization, you generally enter into a contract with the city to make sure that future users get reimbursed for or reimburse you for your cost. So we're saying that before you make a determination to pay for excess capacity, you need to make sure that there's a contract obligation to exist to get that repaid. And the other concern was that there are instances where we may be paying for infrastructure to a facility, but then the residential neighborhood builds up around the school before the school gets built, and then the school starts getting goes to build on. As they find out, the capacity is exhausted. So in this case, we want assurances from the city that they will maintain the infrastructure capacity that we paid for all the way to the time that the building is completed. Then we've asked the select committee to review this process and to come back and make recommendations for future legislation where we can say at state level that there ought to be payment obligations for our excess infrastructure capacity. So we put that in state statute instead of relying on local ordinances. And finally, we ought to have in our comprehensive planning statutes requirements that the cities, when they're planning, plan for locations of your schools, so that that's not something that we have to, if we're going to be building them, it's fair enough for the communities to help us plan where they should go. And finally, we say this is accounting, the expenditure will be under a footnote. We'll have a separate expense organization so we can watch these dollars separately, and we can watch the repayment obligations so we can see if these monies are coming back. It's not intended to be economic development. It's intended to cover the cost of the schools and like the support of it. I think it's a more effective approach to watch our taxpayer dollars.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, just for clarification, and my concern with this has to do with communities and how they develop. And here again, where you have that injury where it says that a community has to treat their infrastructure. Like, I'll give an example up in my community. We have chosen a piece of land that was good to be subdivided. It's up in the east part of town, up on a narrow road that needs to be rebuilt. There's a big subdivision past there that's been in the last 4 or 5 years with probably 60, 70 homes in there. We went in to the School Facilities Commission and bought that piece of land from the developer. Because it's a good place for this new elementary school we're going to build. First thing the city says, well, if you're going to build a new school there, then I want you to help us build that road up. When in fact, on the other side of the proposed location of the new school, there's a subdivision with about 60 or 70 homes. Where does it say in here specifically
that communities are going to come back and be involved in that process so we don't find ourselves building infrastructure for the benefit of communities. I went through the amendment. It's very lengthy. Brought me in there, but I think I missed it.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I have a concern with this amendment as well. And we did have a situation in our community where we wanted to build a school in a particular place, and the city said, nope, we aren't going to provide the infrastructure. My memory is that what happened was the school had to go elsewhere. And that site then got disposed of and used. Mr. President, I think we're going to have to make a decision, and I'm wondering if this amendment is the decision. Either we're going to pay for the infrastructure or we're going to tell the communities that they pay for the infrastructure, but we won't. I think if we pay for some of them, and this amendment looks to me like that's what it's doing, we're going to wind up paying for all of them. And this uncontrollable cost we've got is just going to continue to balloon.
Further discussion? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, just a thought, and I don't know if this is a good or a bad amendment. I think that the School Facilities Commission, you know, are we trying to micromanage what they are trying to do? And I know they've come a long way, and I think some of their decisions have not been popular, but I think they're caught in a catch-22 in this issue because we said they build buildings, and then a city sees a way maybe to get sewer and water and a road extended further for their own purposes, and that's not all bad. They're looking out for themselves, but I was thinking, would it not be better that possibly you direct that if we think this is a problem, that we direct the School Facilities Commission with the school, with the Special Select Committee to look into this, to come up with a plan, and to see then come to the legislature with the request for some funding that say we will enter into community agreements or we will enter in, you give us the ability to negotiate, but we don't just put money in there and say you can do this without any real plan so that communities and the facilities commission or the school facilities commission has a way to say it's a negotiated plan. It is just not, we will do it for the community. It should be maybe a combination of things, but it should be in the rules and regs. And I think that a plan should go forward with the people that have been involved in all of this decision making, and then come back to us with a request, maybe for money to enter into these negotiations.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess the best thing that I can do with this is just kind of relate my personal experience, and I was involved along with the primary sponsor in bringing kind of the original initiative on this to bring some means in which the community could somehow bring about a marriage with the school, and it seems that no one wants to pay for the wedding. But I think however well intended this amendment is, and I certainly respect the sponsor of the amendment and his intentions. But what you have is a situation, at least in my small community, where there's been a kind of an ongoing struggle between the school facilities commission and members of the community, including the city council. Now, what they're wanting to do is put a road into a school that's up and the walls are up and it's virtually, you know, under construction. Now, there's another means of getting to that school. But given some of the new standards, there's certainly considerations of safety and whatnot of opening a path to the front of the school so parents and buses and whatnot can access it better. Under the plan that we brought originally, it would have given the community some say in how this was done and done on their behalf in regard to the safety of children. And given the fact that there's a real perception within that community as they struggle with this issue, that they have given up local control on a lot of the steps along the way. So what this amendment does then is continue to put more marbles into the basket of the School Facilities Commission, and then when the city and the School Facilities Commission sit down to negotiate, it seems again that we've continued to load the basket on the side of the School Facilities Commission. And it seems to me that then the community is going to become further frustrated in this negotiations process in order to try to bring some resolution to this attempted marriage, so to speak. So really, at this point, not speaking necessarily against the amendment, I would just simply say that I have some pretty deep concerns in regard to the fact that this continues to broaden this gulf which have crossed lack of trust that exists between school and community, and on that part of it, I question it.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I view it a little bit different. I view this maybe as a little bit living together before you get married. Now, that may be good or it may be bad, but with that, with the amendment, I think that ultimately it's a step in the right direction towards trying to get someplace we need to be. Ultimately, right now, we have this standoff between local facilities, local communities, and local infrastructure needs, and also school facilities. And in the event in our neck of the woods, particularly there was one site that was selected for a school. We got to argue between the local government about who would put in those roads, and the school facility commission. Ultimately, that site was released, but there was a very smart developer who just skipped and a jump away. Thought, I can solve this problem. So he went out and developed a raw property, put in the infrastructure, put in the roads, put in all the infrastructure needed for the school, and then said, okay, I'm now ready to sell you that property. And so, lo and behold, now all of a sudden, all of those costs are simply folded into the price of the land the school bought and is going to be constructed on. So what we have is right now is kind of being swept under the rug, and I think this amendment does a very good job of bringing it out in the open and creates a step dot, a stop gap for us to start this process. If you go to page 2, particularly line 12 through 27, while we have the $6.9 million to kind of get us started, the Select Committee on School Facilities shall review a process developed by the Commissioner, subsection A, to develop recommendations on the establishment of a permanent process for addressing infrastructure needs. And as you go down through there, it starts talking about capacity. Ultimately, continuing on, eventually, the purpose of that paragraph is then that, skipping line 25, that they'll bring back the recommendations they have of how to deal with this thing, bring them back, and then we can act on, we can pass our policy and get it done. But in the meanwhile, we've got to get some things done. We've got schools that are under construction. We've got infrastructure needs that are going to need to be met. I think that's very telling, and the part that I like about this is on page 1, lines 40, page 1 of the amendment, lines 41 to 43, we're talking about entering into recapture agreements. And so you see this very commonly with any kind of development. You go out, you lay that infrastructure in, and then before anybody else comes to tap in, it's a form of recapture, whether it's tap fees or however you want to structure it, that you can recover the amount of the investment that's been laid out now if the School Facilities Commission does that. Lays out and recapture. And so you have the ability to step whoever comes and taps into those infrastructure to get that money back. And so while you may end up financing a little bit on the front, it does two things. One, it allows us to get it caught back, catch back up, allows us to move forward on this. And then the third point, it comes and allows us to revisit this with some recommendations. The school commission will go out and study this, they'll bring it back. We can then look at it, study it, and we can make those policy decisions and move on. So I think it's a great first step in that direction, and would urge your support of the amendment.
Senator Tate.
Mr. President, if this were a good amendment, the Appropriations Committee would have thought of it during the process. And Mr. President, I have to ask if this amendment was prepared in a timely manner and at 5 o'clock on Tuesday.
Further discussion. Senator Nichols.
Well, I don't know what your suggestion. The fact is, I'm kidding. Happened by 2 weeks ago. I don't know what the issue is, but the folks, in responding to the chairman of the Education Committee, on page 1, the first thing you have to do is to determine what your capacity levels are necessary to provide for your existing infrastructure. Once you decide what the excess is, and that's the part that the school is going to be responsible for paying. To the extent there's an excess capacity, like any landowner, if you want to go out and develop an industrial facility, and you're required to bring out sewer and water, and there's excess capacity, and the city says, look, we want you to design your sewer larger, your water line different. Different communities do it different ways. Some simply say, if you want to get your permit through, you're going to have to oversize everything and then we'll enter into a contract with you where you get reimbursed as other people come on. Other communities that have resources may say, we will pay for the difference in cost. And part of what the School Facilities Commission has said is we're not going to pay any of those cases costs. We will pay for raw land, and we're going to sit here until you bring out services. For those cities that have the resources to do it, they can go out and do it. For those that don't, they say, look, we just don't have funding for this. We don't have the resources to do it, and why should we treat you any different than any other developer who has to pay the cost up front and get reimbursed as other people use the excess capacity? So in that event, excess capacity would be paid if that's what's required, and then you get a contract with the city requiring it to be paid back. That's what you see in the page on lines 31 through 35. And then you repay your cost back, you have a legal obligation. And then you, finally, the other question with respect to the planning, if you go on line 24 through 26, what we want for the commission to do is come back with a permanent process where they evaluate all their costs. But like any landowner, if you want to use undeveloped land and you want to essentially use it because it's less expensive, one of the things you have to consider is the cost of improvements. And before we start seeing schools taken out of the middle of the town because they see this raw land and they say, buy raw land, move a school out of town, and tell the community, you pay for the street, baloney. They need to look at the total cost. Now, the Facilities Commission has a rule right now that says we just aren't going to pay for these costs. Well, that's problematic, too, because if we have a constitutional obligation to build schools, on what basis can we say, well, we'll build you the school if you bring out utilities to land, but we won't build you otherwise? I submit to you, if you have the constitutional obligation to build a school, then you buy raw land, you better be prepared to either bring your utilities out there or you put your own utilities in. You want to be in the county and have a septic system, that's your business, but that's part of the cost of this program. And recognizing, like any developer, that we're going to be in that business because we have to do it, then we ought to also look at it as a business person would and make sure that any excess costs are reimbursed. Now, it's great, and I hope that in some instances communities want to expand or increase capacity of lines. They want to pay for the increased cost and take that burden on us. But for those small communities, they don't have those funds to do it. And you're still going to have to build it, and the community has every right to say we're going to treat you like a developer. In response, we have every right to say, as a developer, we want to get our money back when the time comes. So if we have a constitutional obligation, and we do, to construct schools, you cannot fulfill your constitutional obligation simply by saying, we're going to buy the land and we'll wait till your streets are there, or we'll put that responsibility with business-ready communities with the business council. The business council is not in the...
Mr. President, I'm not standing up after the sponsor taking a second shot at sending him out to endorse the amendment. You know, the more I think about it, We have Supreme Court that's out there telling us that we've got to build $2 billion worth of school system. And you can't replace a lot of schools out there in the middle of town. We have acreage requirements, for instance, with high schools now, 30 to 40 acres. And I'm going to support the amendment. I think that it makes sense, and I think that the city didn't ask for the Supreme Court to mandate that the legislature build $2 billion worth of schools. So I urge that you support the amendment.
Question is, on second reading amendment number 30 to Senate File 1, would the assistant chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Ferrasso?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Beccaria?
Aye.
Beck?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Mastert?
Aye.
Hines? Jennings,
aye.
Job, Johnson,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Massey, Meyer, Mockler, Nicholas, Peck excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Basie, Von Platen, President Schiffer.
Aye.
Vote closed. 26 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused.
Second reading amendment number 30 has passed the Senate. The next amendment is second reading amendment 15, the Meyer amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 15, budget perfected, number 57, Capital Construction Community College Commission.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 15 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, this amendment comes to the floor from the Community College Commission. They requested that authorization for these buildings. There are no general funds or federal funds. This is merely an authorization. There are some of these buildings that are contained in another file that has passed through the system. There is authorization in that particular file, but if something happens to that file, the authorization needs to be remained on a couple of these. Some of these buildings, they are not contained within that particular bill, and the authorization needs to be obtained so they can build those units. And that's primarily up in CWC and NWCC, and those are the areas. Some different ones. You can read them there, Mr. President. But it's a fairly simple thing, just to authorize these so they can go about their job.
Discussion on the amendment. The question is on second reading amendment 50. Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I know that LCCC has 50% of the construction of the health science building in that bill, and they also passed a mill levy for the matching on that bill. Does the letter PR, which is private funding, have any actions on that at all? Pardon me for being paranoid, but sometimes there's a good reason.
They're after me, too. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, there's no alternative motivation in this, Mr. President. There's no effect whatsoever on that. This comes from the Community College Commission. I will soothe the senator's concerns, double check with the Community College Commission, but no alternative motive.
Question is on second reading amendment 15, Senate File 1. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson, Almond, Barrasso, Burns, Case. Coe, Cooper, DiCaria, Beck, Geis, Hasters, Hines, Jennings, Joe, Johnson, Larson, Massey, Meyer, Mockler, Nicholas, Peck excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Vasey, Von Platen, President Schiffer.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Burns, no to aye. Closing. Vote closed. 25 ayes, 4 noes, 1 excuse.
Second reading amendment number 15 has passed the Senate. Second reading amendment number 16, the Geist Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, Second Reading Amendment Number 16, Budget Affected 67, Capital Construction.
Senator Geist.
Mr. President, on the committee on Second Reading Number 16 on Senate File 1, I move to pass. This is $150,000 out of general fund, and what it is for the ongoing study that's going over there on a parking garage at the University of Ohio. And we've talked about this for the last 3 or 4 years. This $160,000 will come out of general fund. Right now, the money's coming out of the highway department. And if you go over there and take a look, the engineer students already have the parking garage designed and ready to go. All we got to do is get the okay and the money. I hope you pass this on the standing committee amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Question is on second reading amendment number 16, the Senate File 1. Would the assistant chief clerk please call the roll?
Okay. Anderson?
No.
Allman?
Yes.
Barrasso? Burns, Case, Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Beck, Geist, Castor, Hines, Jennings, Job, Johnson, Larson, Massey, Meyer, Mockler, Nicholas, Peck excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Basie, Von Platen, President Schiffer,
no.
Closing vote, Allman, aye to no. Closing vote, closing vote closed. 7 ayes, 22 noes, 1 excused.
Second reading amendment number 16 has failed to pass the Senate. We now go to second reading amendment number 44, the Meyer-Job Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, Second Reading Amendment Number 44, Budgets Affected, Number 67, University of Wyoming.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I move Second Reading Amendment Number 44 to Senate File 1. Ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, this just simply adds the word education in the budget in this area. Primarily, this amendment was brought forward to me by Judy Catchpole, the ex-secretary of the Department of Education superintendent, and has to do with the naming of a classroom with the ability to do that over at UW. We felt that it was would be indeed an honor and for our ex-representative and now passed away Jim Hageman to have a classroom named after him over at UW. It entails a little bit more than this. She's going to have to start a foundation, raise $250,000, I believe, to affect that. She's willing to take on that particular job, and I think more power to her. I'm sure that all of us understand the commitment that former Representative Hageman gave to the state as far as education. And if our ex-superintendent wishes to, I think, to honor him in that way, I think we can help out the cause and allow for a classroom to possibly be named after that great representative in Golden County. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 44, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Second reading amendment 44 has passed the same.
The next amendment for our consideration is second reading amendment number 20 to Senate file number 1. The reading clerk will please read the amendment. This is the Schiffer amendment.
Senate file number 1, second reading amendment number 20, budgets affected, 307, Native American Development Center.
Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, I would move second reading amendment number 20. And Mr. Vice President, this goes into the budget for this biennium. It goes into section 30, so first on page 43. It goes into section 307. Mr. Vice President will recall that this is the appropriation that we had for the Native American Development Center. That's the center to train teachers how to teach Native Americans. It applies both to the Shoshone Nation and the Arapaho Nation in our state. They also train for the Crow and the Cheyenne Nation and the Sioux Nations over in the Dakota. This appropriation was contingent upon, and it's on lines 22 and 23, that was only effective if there were federally matching funds. It's a report, Mr. Vice President. The program is up and running. It is operating a school over on our reservation, as well as the Cheyenne and the Sioux, and I believe the Crow Nation also takes part in this. And I did have a handout. I'm sure it's not on the top of your pile. There's a letter from Senator Ramsey to me when we were discussing what was happening to this program. And I'm just going to read part of that letter. It should be on your stack somewhere. And I quote, "I am disappointed that the United States Senate was unable to complete its work on the remaining bills the Senate was dated December 19, 2006. And the project funding I had requested for the Native American Indian, Alaskan, and Hawaiian Educational Development Center. I am a strong supporter of the center, and I originally requested $2.5 million for the center for fiscal year 2007. However, the center will begin the fiscal year 2008 appropriations process in the spring of 2007, and I intend to request funding for the center again." As we all know, things happen in Washington. And they don't always come out the way that we'd like them to. What this budget amendment does is this frees up this $1.2 million, which is in your budget bill for this biennium, without having to have the federal match. I believe it is a good project. I believe they are making a difference in those Indian schools, particularly at the younger grades, and they use teaching skills that I think are appropriate for Native Americans. They can show, and I'd be glad to provide you with the increased success that we're having in those schools because of this teaching, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Consideration? Members of the Senate, this is a transfer, but it is a rather large transfer, and I think that we'll call a roll on this particular amendment. So the question before us is whether the Senate should pass second reading amendment number 20 to Senate file 1, and the clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman? Grasso? Burns? Case?
Aye.
Poe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DiCaria?
Aye.
Beck?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Joe?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Mockler,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Peck excused, Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Vasey,
aye.
Von Slatern,
aye.
President Schiffer,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 20 has passed the Senate. We are now on second reading amendment number 34, the Nicholas Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 34, budgets affected 309 Flex Executive.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 34 to Senate File 1. Following the discussion in the earlier and with respect to the open positions in the Department of Corrections and whether or not we should eliminate those positions or eliminate some flex, what we've done in this provision is eliminated the flex so that those dollars will stay there, so that we'll say, fine, we won't eliminate your positions, but we do eliminate your flex, and it was a great idea, and now I'm already getting the heat for it, because we're going to find out in the next couple of days what's been happening to these funds. We were already learning that some of the funds are being used to go out and recruit in recession. I'm not a problem with that if you're going out to recruit jobs. So on third reading, we may have to come in and deal with that. But now we're also learning that some of the dollars that are in the Section 100s are being used for programming. And so you may hear, and I'm going to be hearing in the next couple of days, but I guess my view of it is there's Section 100 funding for a large number of vacancies, or then they ought to be there. If they need to have more money in other sections, then fine. But that's what the budget provides. I urge your support, but we're going to draw some heat for this, and we'll see what happens.
Discussion on second reading amendment 34. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. One thing that occurs to me that causes me a little bit of concern about this proposal is that we have an awful lot of prisoners out of state right now. And as we expand our facilities, we're bringing them back to Wyoming, which is what we should do. For instance, the Wyoming Women's Center just recently expanded and have some additional spaces available and left. And we brought some of our prisoners back to there. That does require a change in the targeting of that money from out-of-state contractual services to in-state services. So if we were to eliminate this flex authority, my concern is that we're eliminating the ability to bring these folks back into state when we have the capacity to do so.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I do believe we're going to have to get our hands around this particular situation. However, Mr. President, I think that we're kind of shooting from the hip with this particular amendment because we don't know the size and scope of the situation, and we don't know really if we could even label it as a problem. We know that there's a lot of money floating around out there for the unfilled positions, but we also know that we can't fill the unfilled positions in the good penitentiary from Mother County. It just hasn't been happening. And we're going to have to do something, Mr. President, and recruiting and retention is what a lot of these funds are being used for. I would hope that between now and third reading that we can come back in with a more tailored, specific approach that would allow some flexibility to do the things that we know that have to be done, but to give us a comfort level that those funds that are attached to these positions aren't being used unwarranted.
Further discussion, Senator Stock.
Mr. President, the discussion I heard focused on transfer between Section 100 and other uses. And I don't see anything in the amendment that says Section 100. It appears to apply generally. And so my question is, what am I missing in that respect? And the other is, I see it's existing law that July 1, 2006, I presume that the amendment we're making now only applies from the effective date of this act forward. That's the way transfers they've already done are not caught by this.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would urge you to support the amendment. Nobody's trying to cut them short. Nobody said they can't move the prisoners back and forth. But the testimony is, folks, in another committee, there are between 80 and 100 vacancies in the Department of Corrections. That's in the 100 series. That money doesn't go away if they're not filled there. That stays with the department. If we don't do something like this, between 80 and 100 vacancies, they can do most anything they want with that money if we don't do this. We'll find out if it's going to make any shortfall. We'll know that, I would suspect, before the end of the day. But to be funding position 100 and then have that many within one department unfilled, I think is just no budget control at all. So I would urge you to support it. If we need to come back, as Chairman of Appropriations indicated, we can do that. We can take care of it. But this has been a long, long history within state government of having all these unfunded positions, and the money can then go for almost anything. So I would urge you to support it.
Senator Ginny.
Like the sponsor said, by the end of the day, we'll find out what it does.
Mr. Vice President, I hope you'll think carefully before you do this. One of the other things that over the last couple of years that we've done is we started programs in various communities where we move prisoners and get them out of state directly into alternative correctional facilities, which by and large are in their own communities. There's a very large one up in Natona County. There is another one, I believe, over in Sweetwater County. There's a smaller one up in Campbell County. If we move those prisoners out of correction into those facilities, and they are transition facilities and substance abuse treatment facilities, they go out of the corrections department into either sometimes a drug court situation or sometimes just to a contractor out there. With this amendment, particularly with the second portion of it, we don't have any way to transfer those funds to provide that treatment. So I urge you to be a little careful when you do that. The second area it will impact, as we send prisoners out of, for example, Rollins, over to the state hospital, that's two different agencies, you still got to pay for them somehow. And this would curtail that. And these are very, very expensive prisons. So I agree we have a problem in terms of the vacancies and moving salary money around. But when if you're going to severely hamper the management of prisons, then you want to think twice about it. I think maybe we're taking a chainsaw and trying to make a toothpick, and really we need to go in and be a little more surgically accurate. And I agree we can go down this road. But it's got to be done very carefully and very thoughtfully. And I hope you'll resist this amendment, and maybe we can get appropriations to be more surgical, as they're going to be on me in about 10 seconds. Come on, got it. Senator Nicholas.
Well, I'll tell you what, these are important issues, and it is an important issue. What I have to do is withdraw the amendment, and we'll come back on third reading and make sure it's right.
That amendment, Amendment 34, Senate File 1 has been withdrawn.
We are now on second reading amendment number 17, the Geist-Stacey Amendment. The Green Clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 17, budgets affected, budget 300, budget balance or transfer.
Senator Basie.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 17 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, I would like to divide this amendment, and I believe the division would be from line 5 through line 12, taking out that language, and then the rest would be the amendment.
That is divisible.
I think to dispose with the first division there, that money will come in another amendment, so I would like to withdraw that portion of the amendment.
Okay. Division 1, which is lines 5 through 12 of this amendment, has been withdrawn, barring objections for order. We're on Division 2, which is lines 1 through 4 and lines 13 through 23. Senator Vasey.
President, this is the budget reserve account for the account that takes care of water tanks, water systems. A lot of municipalities use this account. It's running a little low on money, and this would certainly help bring that reserve back to where it was. This current go-around, there were several projects that had to be withdrawn or downscaled, so I would hope that you would favorably consider this amendment.
Further discussion? The question is, on second reading amendment number 17, division 2, which is lines 1 through 4 and 13 through 23, would the Assistant Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson, Allman, Barrasso, Burns, Case, Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Beck, Geis, Hastert, Hines, Jennings, Job, Johnson, Larson, Massey, Meyer, Mockler, Nicholas, Peck excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Basie, Von Flatern, President Schiffer.
No.
Closing vote closed. 19 ayes, 10 noes, 1 excused.
Division 2 of second reading amendment number 17 has passed the Senate. Vice President.
The next amendment for our consideration is Amendment 40, the Schiffer-Geis Amendment. The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 40, budget perfected, 300, budget balancer transfers.
Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, I would move second reading amendment number 40. Mr. Vice President, what this amendment does, it goes into the Water 3 account, which is our large project storage account, and boosts it up. It adds an additional $20 million to that account. What we're trying to do is prepare a sizable fund, and it is going to take a sizable amount of money, either for major storage projects. The reason I bring this is, and we don't have any projects in the pipeline right now, but the projects that fall into Water 3 are large projects, they're storage projects. The last one we built was on the Snake River.
Again, it's preparing the way so that we can start using the water that's flowing out of this state to cover our headwater state to all these other states, and they're using our water. Sooner or later, I believe, and I think people who know a heck of a lot more than I do, that if we don't use that water, they're using it now, and they're going to claim it as theirs. And you've got to use water to actually own it. And in theory, we own it, but in fact, we let it continue to flow. We don't own it, and they'll take it away from us. And what we're doing is trying to boost up that the fund that builds large storage projects. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment? Questions? Members of the Senate, again, this is another sizable transfer, and I think that it merits a roll call vote. So the question is second reading amendment number 40 to Senate File 1, and the Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Barrasso?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DiCaria?
Aye.
Beck?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Pastor?
Aye.
Hines? Denning? Joe? Johnson?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Moffler? Nicholas?
Aye.
Heck excused. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Session?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Vasey?
Aye.
Von Slatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing?
Aye.
Coe? Arteneau? Meyer? Meyer? No to I. Closing? Vote closed. 19 ayes, 10 noes, 1 excused.
Second reading amendment 40 has passed the Senate. Next amendment is second reading amendment 18. The DiCaria, Johnson, Meyer, Peterson amendment. Amendment, would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 18, budget perfected, 303 employee benefits.
Senator DiCaria.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 18 to Senate File 1, and I would ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. Mr. President, this amendment would take $3.35 million and help the retirees of our state, our retired state employees, help pay for their health insurance. Mr. President, in 2006, the average check that a state retiree received was $1,256. At the same time, Mr. President, their average health care cost for a spouse and for the retiree and a spouse was $1,008. So that was leaving them less than $250 per month to cover those expenses. In 2007, of course, as we all are very much aware, health care costs have risen. And now if we use the same figures, pretty much their retirement checks are pretty much the same, but the health care costs have gone up, which leaves them about $34 a month. Mr. President, this was the recommendation that was in the governor's budget as far as trying to go down this route. And Mr. President, I'm very much aware, and I've been through this several times in the past, and I know what some of the downside arguments are, but Mr. President, it seems to me with health care, and we all understand the problems with health care, but you know, if we don't start doing something in some areas as far as helping people with health care, you know, it's just going to make the problem worse, and it's going to spread that across the board. We're all going to pick up the cost of those things. So what this amendment would do, we would take that money, and it would pay a retiree $1,150 per year of service up to a maximum of 30 years of service pre-Medicare And then once they qualify for Medicare, it would be $5.75 per year of service up to a maximum of 30 years. Mr. President, I passed out yesterday, but I'm sure it's well in the bottom of your stack by this point in time. But if you took an employee of the state of Wyoming, and let's just take one that has served between 30 and 34 years, and if they've been retired for 30 years, their retirement check is $800. So they're not really taking home a lot of money in retirement. I mean, that's probably the thing that hasn't had a very good track record as far as going up with inflation. We all know very, very well that health care costs have been going up and up and up. And what we're forcing people into is situations where they're having to make decisions about do they provide health care and have insurance for health care, or do they have to pay for other things. And so it seems to me that, you know, these are people that spent, in a lot of cases, spent their entire working careers providing service to the state of Wyoming. And it seems to me also that it's probably time for us to maybe take that seriously and just help them out. This is not asking you to pay for their entire health care costs. I mean, we all understand that isn't practical. But it would pay for a portion of their health care costs, which would help them with this problem. Obviously, it's something that needs to be, you know, addressed. I mean, healthcare, you know, I'm kind of surprised, you know, that we're not talking more about it than we are as far as that. We all realize there's a big problem. We realize that that's a federal problem. But some of those things, quite frankly, are out of our control, and we realize that as far as the federal side of things. But locally, we can do some good, and we could help by providing these people with at least a little bit of added assistance so that they can pay for their health care costs. I would ask for the body's favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if the sponsor could give me some idea. I'm speaking of the Medicare portion of it. It appears to me $575 up credit up to 30 years would provide $172.50 a month. When you're in Medicare, all you need is a Medicare supplement policy. I think that is in excess of what most Medicare supplement policies are going for at this particular time. So isn't that over and above the cost of health care?
Further discussion? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a topic that we struggle with year in, year out. But there are fundamental problems with this approach. First of all, this benefit in this amendment is only being applied to those retirees who remain active or remain a participant in the state plan. That's only a small percentage of your retirees, and I apologize, I forgot the percentage, but I want to say 20-30%. So you could have given a lifetime of service to the state of Wyoming, and when you left retirement or left service, you bought your own private insurance, you get nothing. You could have worked 5 years for the state of Wyoming and you get a benefit. That simply is not fair. If you want to be fair and implement a plan like this across to all state employees, you're going to be in the $20 to $30 million or more every year. If you also want to provide the same benefit to your school teachers, you're going to have to put in, now you're going to be the $40 to $60 million. Why select out one group of employees simply because they happen to elect in the plan? Now, the evidence is also that with respect to this plan, we do subsidize their insurance today. The active employees pay a premium that reduces the cost for the retirees. Now, that's not to say that if you, when you retire from the state, you could not find a less expensive policy, because you can. But you're not going to find the less expensive policy that provides for prescription care coverage, full benefits like that. So the if you want a plan that's as lucrative as the state plan, you're probably not going to find it at all. But if you were to find it, it would be much more expensive than the plan that they offer. So retirees do find themselves in a position that when they retire, if they think they're going to want prescription care coverage, they traditionally stayed in the plan. If they wanted to gamble and think that they weren't going to have it, they might find a less expensive plan and go out. Now, the new Medicare options are going to affect this. We really don't know where that's all going to lay out over time. But the truth is that not everybody stayed in the plan. Their premiums are presently being subsidized. And, folks, this is not something that employers typically provide. I don't know any employers in my community that are private employers that provide insurance coverage after employees leave. And with respect to the amount of your retirement, it was never anticipated that while you work, that the only retirement that you build is the retirement you put into your retirement system. Most people are required to save for these things. And when I go around and I meet these folks, I see a lot of them in my community, and they all complain about the same issues. But frankly, they all live in homes. And many of them have bought those homes when they're very inexpensive. Their debts are paid off. And yet I have state employees who are active, young people, young teachers who are trying to figure out how to even buy a home. And if you're going to put $40 million into the system to be equitable, then put it into active employees and pay up their, increase their salaries so they can buy the homes later. This system, if you want to do it fairly, is very expensive, and it competes with the amount that we can pay active employees, and that's where our responsibility is. When you retire, you retire. And if you retire before 65, how is that fair that we're going to pay your insurance until you're 65 when all of your other constituents, they have to work till they're 65, and we have constituents that are working well beyond that just to pay their insurance. And just because you're working for the state should make you no exception.
Further discussion from your staff.
Well, Mr. President, you know, fair is fair. I've got a lot of constituents who would like to retire, but they have to keep on working because they can't afford the health insurance. And I've got others that are in this boat, but they didn't happen to work for the state, and they're having to pay for their own. It's very expensive, and some of them can't afford it. Mr. President, if we're going to start doing this, we need to do it for everybody. The Health Care Commission is getting the cost of that figured out. But the best estimates we have at this point is it is somewhere between $1 and $3 billion for the B per year. If we're going to get the state in the business of providing insurance for everybody. And I don't see how we're going to afford that. So it does seem to me a bit unfair to single this particular group out for special treatment when we can't take care of all the rest of the citizens.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. There was a question about I guess it would be the Medicaid wraparound, and if anybody has this speak, you may have kept it around. Premium for that without drug coverage is $151.43 for health a month, and family with just a retiree and spouse plus 65 is $302.86. Mr. President, these particular people, they are different than the rest of the people in the state for one reason, that they are our ex-employees. And so that differentiates them from everybody walking up and down the street. And I think that we've seen what we've done this year. There's a bill moving through that's going to provide for a 1% payroll deduction to help with benefits in the future for our employees in the future. However, Mr. President, we have a lot of employees right now that have a problem making ends meet. Now, they're not an employee of a company. They're not an employee of a private individual. They're an ex-employee of ours. And so, Mr. President, that's the difference. There are ex-employees. And so whether you're former, ex means former, Mr. President. So, and that's the reason I think why this amendment is before us today, is realizing that our ex-employee in our retirement system is not adequate. And there's no one that can say that it is adequate to provide these folks with a retirement, with health insurance or anything else. This isn't providing with all the health insurance. This is just a little bit so that they can actually afford the prescription drugs, so they can actually afford to pay the heat for their houses. Some of the folks that have retired 20, 30 years ago, they didn't retire with a $1,400, $1,500 a month retirement. They retired for $700 or $800 a month. They're behind on that. And maybe they were frugal enough and got a good spouse and they're making ends meet kind of. But this one's a tough one. This one just helps these folks out a little bit. You're not picking up the whole tab.
Further discussion for the primary sponsor takes the second shot. Senator Alden.
Mr. President, I'm standing for this amendment too. I think there's another aspect that we see. These people, they give up their life. I mean, some of them work for 30 or 40 years for the state, and they have used our insurance. And then they go, and they're in their 50s, late 50s. They go out, and yes, they could go to a private company, but most private companies won't take them at that age. What they do take and what they will cover is very limited, and I think we need to keep that in mind too. So their only choice, and a lot of times, is to stay with the state insurance company because that's where they're going to be covered to continue that coverage. Because if the older you get and then you have to change companies, it's a very difficult thing to do for any older person to do that. So I hope that we'll support this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Zuccheri.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, we went from $3.3 million to $40 million to $1.2 billion, all in one trip around the room. Mr. President, I'd like to kind of focus back on what we're talking about right now. And Mr. President, these state employees, you know, if you've ever talked to state employees, and we're doing a much better job, but if you've talked to state employees, over a lot of the course of most of their careers, they were not paid very well. And Mr. President, I was before I went into teaching, I was a surveyor in the oil boom, and I went to work, you know, for the highway department in summer after I started teaching, and I was, quite frankly, amazed and a little bit appalled about the wages that we pay our state employees at that time, Mr. President. And I know we've made good strides, and we've been trying to bring some of that up. And Mr. President, I'm amazed at that clear 2020 hindsight that we have. But, you know, some of these people have been retired for a long time. And if you can tell me that you can predict for me exactly every condition that you're going to face 20 to 30 years down the road, I would love to hear it. You know, and Mr. President, it would be nice if everybody had those great situations where everything went the right way and everybody was smart enough and bright enough and planned out all those things in order to take care of all those things. Mr. President, I know it's not the case. It wasn't the case in my parents. I mean, my parents, you know, as far as that, they weren't state employees. Mr. President, they didn't even live in the state of Wyoming. But, you know, I mean, they raised five children, worked very hard. My dad was a laborer who only got through the eighth grade. worked very hard. We all got to college. You know, we all ended out well. But quite frankly, I can tell you at the end, you know, living conditions were not the greatest as far as that. And so in some cases, it's just, you know, it's real easy to sit and look back on that and say, you should have, you could have, and all of those things. At present, all I'm trying to focus on is maybe being of some benefit. Is it fair? At present, I could tell you that we've talked about lots of things yesterday and today that I bet we could probably argue every time they're not fair. They don't affect everybody equally. You know, it's not a fair world. It's not an equitable world. Quite frankly, it's not just sometimes. But, you know, if we just focus back on this, Mr. President, I think it's one of those things that we could do to help some of these people out. And it's one of those people issues that maybe we could make at least some people's lives a little bit better and help them out. Thank you, Mr. President.
The question is, in second reading amendment number 18, would the assistant chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson? Allman? Barrasso? Burns? Kate? Coe? Cooper? DeCaria? Beck? Geist? Pastor? Hines? Jennings? Job? Johnson? Larson? Massey? Meyer? Mockler, Nicholas, Peck excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Basie, Von Platern, President Schiffer,
no.
Closing vote closed. 15 ayes, 14 noes, 1 excuse.
Second reading amendment number 18 has passed the Senate. Second reading amendment number 18 has not passed. What I said originally counts. What I thought. Unless we get a break pretty quick, I'm going to continue to become confused whether it's. But you're wrong.
Mr. President, I have a privilege of the floor. Yes,
the floor is yours.
Maybe we can have a moment here just to take a breath. Mr. President, we have with us Shannon Grover's East High School government class. I've had the opportunity to speak to that class on a couple occasions before, and they're here in the West Balcony, and I'd ask them to stand up and welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. Second reading amendment number 19. Discussions to carry effect Johnson Mocker Ross Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read it in?
Senate file number 19, budgets affected, 303, employee benefits.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, I'd like to move second reading amendment number 19. Senate File 1. And this is asking for the additional 2% employee benefit that the Employee Compensation Commission unanimously approved, and they took the market step. And what this does is additional 2%, which amounts to $4,044,197. What this does is it puts in the market survey portion of the salary benefit that was taken out by the Appropriations Committee. It was approved by the governor. The Compensation Commission approved it. And I will tell you the reason why it came forward from the governor and the Compensation Commission. We know how difficult it has been to get the bands, our employee bands, right and fair, and employees in those bands and things. A tremendous amount of work has been done. Also, what has been done for our employees is the surveys that go out. But the surveys are 1 year behind. So that when it comes forward, they are already a full year behind the salaries that are currently being paid. What's happened with this is that if we take this portion of it out, there will be no ability to pay the portion of the market survey that brings people up a little bit further. They're not coming up all of the way. But it brings those positions that our market surveys show that are behind, it will bring them forward a ways. And I will submit to you, the Senate, that these are the positions that we talk about our kids coming home to. We talk about keeping employees in our state government instead of going to the private sector. These are the positions right now that are coming back under market value. And there was a survey done by Dr. Mark Harris at UW, and it shows that a private industry job earned 14.8% a quarter wage increase above what we are doing for that part of the market. We've heard stories. We've had a couple of bills go through here that is telling us how short our employee base is, especially our very highly trained employees. How short that employment pool has become. And so I would submit to you that instead of letting it get almost 3 years behind before we discuss this again, let's put this 2% back in, let it go forward with what the 3.25 that the appropriations left in, and then the extra 2% that will go for that market adjustment that we need to keep these people. Also, we have heard about the numbers of openings that we have in state employees. A lot of these openings are very highly trained people. We are not getting those people, and we need to get them. And we need people, as the fine chairman of appropriations said, we need to pay people in order for them to be able to buy a home. You know that according to the Wyoming index that we use for our economic analysis division, do you know that from July 1st, 2005 to July 1st, 2006, the cost of goods rose in our state by 5.6%? And that's according to our economic analysis division. And another increase is expected in July 1st of this year. And so keep in mind, the wage surveys go back a year. Now we are in this year, and if we wait till next year, we are almost 3 years behind in this. And I think, you know, we don't even have a 1% unemployment rate in this state. And I would just submit to you that the work that has gone into trying to balance the wages and the bans and the bringing this stuff where it should be, those employment packages where they should be. Don't cut out part of it. A lot of careful thought has gone into this, a lot of careful planning, a lot of careful analysis. Don't let part of that slip out of it and not do the complete thing so we can go forward next year and we won't have to go back and try to make up or just let people slip further behind. So I would try to answer any questions, but I will tell you from all the things I've seen on this floor, this is not bricks and mortar. This is not water. This is human people. These are human individuals that in your community, that are in every community in this state, and they're the ones that go pick your kids up out of the drug houses in the middle of the night. They plow your roads. They do all kinds of things for us. And people, they are the ones that make the programs work that we set on this floor and tell the state are necessary for the citizens of this state, and it takes employees, And I would encourage us not to stop this well-thought plan and let us go forward and continue trying to fund these programs and target the people that need to be targeted with increased wages. So I thank you for listening, and I would ask try to answer any questions that you have.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. The management audit group did a study on audit on market pay. And one of the things that came out in that study is that through two governors, we've had statutes that says that we're supposed to develop a plan on how to address market pay on a, not competitive, but on a comparable level. And that statute says that we're supposed to go out into the open market and private industry and compare some of these jobs with private industry. When you look at WildDot and their truck drivers, you can find out that's not happening. We found out that what's in that study also, that what happens is session after session, the legislature puts little band-aids up on this thing over and over again. The recommendation that came here for management audit was to put some teeth into the Employee Compensation Commission so that this could be figured out and fixed. The difference in some of those wages that we looked at is what we're doing is the 12-state average, and there's some people that are being paid 30% below that average and some people being paid 70% above that average. So what you're doing today with a 2% increase across the board is that person on the bottom with 30%, 30 or 40% low, he's getting brought up a little bit. The guy up on the top that's 70% above that average, he's getting a bigger jump on the 2% than the guy on the bottom. So when you do 2% across the way on a system that's not working according to statute anyway, you're not fixing it. The guy on the bottom is getting a little bit. The guy on the top is getting a whole lot. And I think what we need to do, rather than to continue to put band-aids on it, is make them Employee Compensation Commission go use the power that we were trying to give them and fix the problem.
Andrew Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And let me talk about what I think the facts are. The amendment before you is not a market pay adjustment. It's a cost of living adjustment of 2%. The executive branch recommended that we, you recall that we have a 3.5% cost of living increase scheduled in for the first year of the biennium and another 3.5% for the second year of the biennium. The executive office recommended that we do a 5.5% cost of living adjustment for the second year of the biennium. Now, if we're going to do, and the notion was, if times are good, let's give a higher increase to state employees. If you do go from 3.5% to 5.5%, another 2% cost of living increase, then you should do it for all state employees, university, the community colleges, and everyone else. There is no rational basis for saying that only some folks get it. Now, in fact, last year, and in this budget, in the present two-year budget, we put in $8.8 million for the executive office for market pay adjustments. And for the university, we put in $2.5 million for what we call parity adjustments. And for the community colleges, we put in $8.9 million for adjustments for parity adjustments. And in this budget, we are recommending, and it's already built in, an additional $3.1 million for market adjustments. So in this biennium, we'll have put in $12.9 million for state employees just for market and pay adjustments. Now, a separate issue is, should we give all state employees a 2% cost of living adjustment? And the JAC looked at it and said, we're doing well. We gave a lot of money for market adjustments, and we have cost of living adjustments. And it's been a long time for a lot of us that have seen regular cost of living adjustments. And it seemed like that we've done a good job with this.
But so I oppose the amendment for two reasons. One is if you're going to do a cost of living adjustment, and that's what you want to do, do it for everybody. 2% across the board for all employees. And two, with respect to the compensation package, we have done a good job. We have a 3.5% cost of living increase for both years of the biennium, which compounds on itself. And you have the market pay adjustments of nearly $12 million that we put in.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, there is something else that is going on here with a lot of our longtime state employees without the 2%. And what has happened is in this pay adjustment, they brought the lower end up to the middle. And then you have people sitting there at the middle who have worked their way up to the middle. And we had to do that because you can't hire people what the lower end was. So the only difference you have sometimes, there's very little difference from someone who has worked 10 years or 1 year in what's happening with our pay adjustments. If you don't give the 2% cost of living adjustment, then what happens when you pay one part of your people that have worked 2 years and you don't pay the person who has worked 10 years? And I don't know what the answer is to that, but I will tell you that we have many state employees that the only difference that they have in pay from a 1 or 2 year employee is the longevity pay that we do. That's the only difference. And so along with all of this other, if you put the 2% in there, you can go back in and adjust all those levels so that everyone equally is doing what they is taking part of this phenomenal, I guess, increase in money that we have in this state. At this point, they are not. And so that's why I would urge that we keep with that compensation package, because it was, and here again, I would tell you, it was well thought out. It was planned with A&I. It was the Compensation Commission brought it forward as a package, and I would hope that we would keep with that package instead of further skew our pay plan. Thank you.
Question is, in second reading amendment number 19 to Senate File 1, would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
No.
Hallman? Barrasso?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DiCaria?
No.
Beck?
No.
Price? Pastor,
Hine,
Denning,
no.
Joe, Johnson,
no.
Larson,
no.
Massey,
no.
Meyer,
no.
Moffler,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Tech excused, Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Scott,
no.
Session,
no.
Townsend,
no.
Basie, Von Slater?
No.
President Schiffer?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 10 ayes, 19 noes, 1 excused.
Second reading amendment number 19 is failed the Senate. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Majority Party.
I ask that the Senate take a 10-minute recess.
The Senate will take a recess to the sound of the gavel.